This is Writers Mosaic in Conversation. Johnny Wright talks to Archie Maddox about his TV series Cronkton, his adaptation of Alice Wheatle's novels.
It's Johnny Wright here for Writers Mosaic, introducing showrunner supremo Archie Maddox, who's just released Cronkton, which is available to watch now on BBC iPlayer, BBC Three. Mm-hmm. Any other platforms?
As of yet, no. But there are discussions taking place. So hopefully there's another platform where international people can watch it.
There we go. So watch this space.
Yeah.
So yeah, tell me. I mean, I just binge-watched. I was telling you off-air, just binge-watched all 10 episodes. Mm. And yeah, tell me about the process of getting... of Cronkton from the beginning. Tell me Cronkton's origin story. And, well, first off, tell me what Cronkton is about.
Cronkton, I'd say it's just about the lives of kids figuring out how, what people they want to be, what world they want to live in, and how they want to shape the world around them and how they want the world to shape them and what effect they can have on their surroundings as young people, basically. But, you know, the overarching storyline, or the one that is marketed, is that the main character, Little Bit, is groomed by his brother-in-law, Manjaro, into gang life and him then rejecting it.
So, and yeah. Cronkton is set in it's a tale of two cities. You have North Cronkton and South Cronkton, where we have most of the action taking place in South Cronkton.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so Cronkton itself is based off Croydon and Brixton, and it's an amalgamation of the two things. And what I found fun about doing Cronkton, because we shot it up in Leeds, which Yorkshire, obviously, where you're from. You're from Leeds?
I'm from nearly, from West Yorkshire, Leeds, from Halifax.
Halifax.
Leeds is the biggest city.
Right. But so what we did is, for South Crom, they sound like London. And for North Crom, we had all the actors be from Yorkshire. It is that north-south divide that every major city slash country has. The north hates the south hates the north, the east hates the west. For no reason.
But in your version, the North has the money. Or a bit more money.
The North, essentially, no. For the South, the thing about Cronkton is nothing is what you think it is. So when we see North Crong having more money, that's because South Crong thinks that they're richer. It's the same estate.
They fine over crumbs.
Yeah. And then outside of Cronkton, there's areas like Notre Dame and Fireclaw Heath and places like that. And areas within there will have more money. The same way that, like, you know, around Brixton, you get places like Herne Hill or Dulwich or places like that, which have more money. But essentially, it's, you wouldn't quite call it Brixton. So those are kind of satellite places to
Dulwich
Cronkton.
Is not Brixton.
Nah, Dulwich ain't Brixton. But if you ask someone from Dulwich, they'll go, yeah, Brixton.
And then they're based on a series of Alex Wheatle books.
Yeah.
The first of which is called Little Bit, who's the protagonist, the main character. Although I'd say it's an ensemble piece, but Little Bit is...
Yeah, Little Bit is, I'd say he's slightly more main than the others. Particularly because it's aimed at kids. Particularly so kids can work out, oh, this is the main hero. And so he has emerged as the number one protagonist. But I'd say all the kids are protagonists.
Yeah, and they work really well as that ensemble. And what's great is as you go to the POVs of different kids throughout the episodes.
Yeah.
Which is great. These books, so you had, first book's called Little Bit, the second book's called Cronkton Nights, and then there were a bunch of other books from Alex Wheatle, who unfortunately we lost very recently.
We did lose very recently, literally a week before the show came out, which... You know, it's really sad. It's really sad. He got to see some of it, and he makes a cameo in one of the episodes, so that's nice. But it's really sad because Cronkton's had a great reaction. It's sad that he hasn't got the chance to see the reaction that it's got. His family have, and they, you know, they're very happy. As far as the family members I've spoken to, they're very happy with the reaction it's got. I wish Alex would have been around. I think he'd be happy with what is out there.
Yeah.
In fact, I know he was happy, so yeah.
And so how was the process then? How did you get involved? Yeah, what was the origin story of Cronkton as a TV show?
So I got introduced to Alex, and I loved his books, and I went and I wrote a pilot. The pilot got pitched around, eventually landed at CBBC, and that version of the pilot was aimed slightly older. And they went, look, we can green light this if it's aimed for a younger audience. And I went, okay, calm, no problem. The kids' ages didn't change. It was just some of the language that they use and the subjects they explored, there had to be a slight shift in exploring those subjects so that it wasn't too raw for, you know, like 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, wrote the pilot. They said, yeah, all right, let's do it. And that was, as of today, that was about... it was about a year and a half ago that I heard that we was greenlit and going to be doing it. So I think all in all, we'd written 5 episodes at this point. So we had the first 5, there's 10 episodes. And when they said, okay, green light, it was like, okay, write the rest of them. Yeah, then it all came together. We shot in April of 2024. And then it came out in March of 2025. It was interesting because... getting the 10 episodes filmed, I think we filmed until the end of June, maybe the start of July. No, it was the end of June, very end of June. And then it was all doing post-production, which took ages. Because there's like loads of like visual effects and stuff in the show. And stuff that you don't think is going to be a thing is suddenly a thing. Like, you know, making... because sometimes like steam on a cup of tea don't come out on camera. So then you've got a VFX steam onto a cup of tea. And that costs $7,000. And you're like, I don't know why. Like, why can't we just film a cup of tea close up? And like, no, you can't, because the steam's not going to come out properly. And you're just like, this is insane. Why? I don't care if the cup of tea is not steaming. And they're like, yeah, but it looks weird. And then I saw it, and I'm like, yeah, it does look weird. I understand now why, you know, there's barely do you see people riding around on bikes. It's because they got to be on a helmet and they got to be on a trolley and they got to be a stuntman doing this. And I'm like, okay, so to have them running on a bike for 10 seconds, that cost me $25,000. I ain't doing that. They're just going to walk and talk now. It's not going to change things too much, but just certain times I'll be like, does this scene need to be in this place? Could it be here? Does that save us some money? Does that mean we can put money to something else?
Being a showrunner, it is part of the job is to also be a producer of kind and... yeah, of sorts as well.
Yeah, because the first season I was associate producer, which isn't a real role. It's just like a title that you give to someone so that they don't complain. But in the second season, if the second season is happening, I am exec producer on that, which means I have more input / more headaches. But I also have to kind of figure out how best to manage what we want versus what's feasible versus what will make the rest of the show better.
Yeah.
Rather than just being the writer who's like, no, this is my vision. Don't mess with my beautiful words kind of thing. Which I'm not really like anyway, but I could have been.
Because I thought the writing was very funny, but also very dramatic. And I thought those bits of drama were really well earned and then were often undercut with great bits of comedy as well. And have you got any favourite like takeaway lines?
There's a few. So there's loads of made up slang in Crompton, which I really enjoy. But it's Caribbean slang essentially. So like whenever, because they can't swear, so in Trinidad instead of saying shit, they'll say shucks, and so the kids say shucks a lot, which I really like. Or if it's like a worse thing, they'll say shims, which is worse than shucks. They're still not saying shit, which I just find really funny. I think one of my favourite phrases in Crompton of the slang that we've got in there is, like, you know, when people try not to swear and they, like, the one I grew up with was people would go cheese and peas and rice and corn. And it really used to make me laugh because I'm like, you're trying so hard not to cuss a bad word that you're saying all this stuff. And it's just little words like that I find really funny because I think... I use them still. Like I, from time to time, I'll say rice and corn, and so my partner will go, what? I was trying not to swear around the kids. I think my favourite lines also in Crompton is there's two little speeches from Little Bit where one, he gives a speech to his friends in episode 3. Where he's talking about perseverance. And it's just such a dumb way of giving a motivational speech, which is they think they're getting beaten by South Krong in sports day. And he turns to his friends and he goes, guys, when I was little, there was a hill that I didn't think I could get up. I got little legs. I'm scared of heights. Just all this dumb stuff that he's saying. And he goes, but my dad told me that the hill ain't nothing but the ground poking out. And so I got up that hill and I saw everything, and Crompton was a lot smaller because I'd seen it all. And I just thought, such a dumb kid way of like of giving motivation. But it's also, it's kind of nice.
It is.
Because he's not, he doesn't realise what he's saying is ridiculous. And there's another one. Actually, there's another two. There's a joke in there that I'm so happy with. Because it's basically, because the show, the audience is a younger audience. We can't do the riskiest jokes all the time. So in episode two, they're trying to come up with this solution for a water gun where they can put stuff in there that will make North Krong never come back. And Rapid says, oh, you should use Scotch Bonnet. One time I was cutting up Scotch Bonnet and I didn't wash my hands. And then he went, you know what, never mind.
Yeah.
And that joke means so many different things to different people. Like every man will go, I touched his dick in it.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what happened. Whereas like younger people go, well, I touched his eye. Yeah, it hurts when you touch your eye. And so I'm like, okay, that's a joke that works on many levels. And then the other one, which I really like, is it's a Malcolm X quote. So there's all these quotes in there from different...
Well, even one of the episodes called Chickens Coming Home to Roost.
Yeah, it's that episode where... Little Bit is saying, a wise man once said, chickens always come home to roost. And then he undercuts it with kid logic. He just goes, and that's kind of obvious, because where else are chickens going to go? They live in a roost. Like,
so I don't understand. Listening, Malcolm.
Yeah, but it's just, for me, that's just a way of getting kind of ideas from people that like I really respect or really got into growing up. And putting it in this show so people are getting those messages without knowing where they're from and going like, oh, that's quite insightful. Or like there's a Breaking Bad reference in episode one where Elaine and Manjaro are arguing and she says, you're putting your son in danger. He goes, I am the danger. Which to me, I just go, that's like a Simpsons thing that they would reference other things.
Yeah.
And I was trying, they wouldn't let me do it in the end. When he says, I am the danger, I was trying to get a Breaking Bad Sting a guitar in there. They're like, no, it's too far.
There was a Godfather type reference when he's like, you come to me on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all these references. I mean, I won't ruin in season two, but there's some references in season two that I'm so happy with. That I think this is going to be hilarious when the kids are all dressed up in that thing. Or like there's prohibition references in this thing.
Because I loved the cartel bit. And when they're looking for Shadow Benny, which is another great Caribbean nod.
Yeah.
But that whole episode looking for Shadow Benny and the cartel have come in. And the reason there's no Shadow Benny and the whole of South Krong is because the cartel came in and jacked up the price by... five times.
Yeah, so it's the drug trade, essentially. That episode is essentially talking about the drug trade and how the drug trade works. And so we had to change a bunch of stuff because originally it was called Crompton Spice. And they were like, no, kids are going to think that's an actual drug. So I'm like, okay, fine, we'll call it Shadow Benny and make it a herb. Then that's an easy way of doing it. But then the gangster crew that runs the Crompton Herb and Spice trade, they're called the Saga Boys, which is a Trinidadian term for... kind of like dandies that will dress up in these fine suits and then sometimes be involved in crime, but sometimes not, which is why the Prohibition Zoot Suit thing came about. And it was just, there's all these...
Malcolm X would have loved this show.
I think so. He was half Grenadian, wasn't he? So yeah, he would have been into it.
Yeah. And I love also, there was... when you say about the kind of like the almost... when I was watching the show anyway, it was almost like you're aiming for two audiences, like your younger audience and then
100%.
Adults as well. And there was, I thought it was really skillfully done how, almost like in a Seinfeld way when the mum was 40, he'd been wanking.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, should I, do you need to talk to your dad?
Yeah, your dad needs to have a talk with you. Like, no. What?
Yeah, but if you're watching it as a kid who's not yet wanking, it still makes sense.
Yeah, you go... okay, he was just being weird and his mum thought, she don't want to talk to him about it. I get it. And all the parents are like, that kid was wanking, man.
Yeah, I thought there's loads to get as an adult, and if my kids were a bit older. My eldest is three, so I think she's a bit young for it.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say that's fair.
is there any passages from the original Alex Wheatle books which you kind of found... inspirational or that stick in your memory?
Do you know what? This sounds kind of bad, but this is like my way of adapting stuff because I've adapted a few things. As soon as I read the book, I try and ignore as much about the book as I can because then otherwise I know that I'll end up doing a bad impression of the book. And so for that reason, there's not... There's a sequence in Crompton Nights where they go to get Venetia's phone back from her boyfriend Sergio, which we have an episode of in the first season.
Which again is like this whole add up, because it was like there was an explicit photo of her, but it turned out it was kind of a spoiler.
Yeah,
it's not an explicit photo, but the whole episode it ran like that again, two level.
So that episode was hilarious, because when we were doing the read through for it, and like the kids hadn't read it yet, we were doing the read through with the execs from the BBC, and when it got to the picture bit, Samson, who plays Little Bit, stood up and he went, "You guys know this is for kids, yeah?" And we were like, "Yeah, Samson, relax, man. You're gonna see it." He's like, "Oh, it's not naked pictures." And like the people at BBC were really surprised, because Samson's 12 or 13 at this stage.
Yeah.
They were like, "Oh, he knows what nudes are." I'm like, these kids have seen people's heads getting cut off. They know so much more than what we fit, which is why for me, the issues in Crompton that we talk about, they have to be seemingly older, but they're not actually older. They are things that those kids are going through, you know, naked pictures, sexual harassment, all that kind of stuff. That is what kids are going through now. Like it's a different world. Do you know what I mean? They're aware of so many more things. They're emotionally aware of themselves as well. And so that kind of knowing what kids are like now, it allows the writing of the show to kind of give the kids some emotional dexterity that I feel like if the show was made 15 years ago, you wouldn't have. It would be a much sort of younger show, with air quotes.
Which brings me on to... adolescents, actually, and I know there's been some comparisons of like almost. I remember I read one article which was like, "This is Adolescence," which is a Netflix show about how can I say it without spoiling it? Did you watch it?
Yeah, about the manosphere.
Okay, yes, a Netflix show about the manosphere and about what 13-year-old kids can get up to. Really dark, but this is a show with similar dark issues, but is actually for adolescence, I would say. Whereas adolescence is more, they talk about showing it in sixth forms and stuff, but it is is more for an adult audience, and it's more for like parents be scared of what your kids might do. Whereas this is for
younger people. I mean, and to be honest, I saw the thing about them saying they're gonna show adolescence to sixth form, I'm like, it's too late.
Yeah.
That's way too late. You wanna be showing adolescence to 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Realistically, if you wanna
do something.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking, they always do this thing of going, "Oh, we wanna get kids off the street, we're gonna start getting them at 16. I'm like, they're already on road.
Yeah.
You gotta get them when they're 9, 10 years old before all that stuff has gone in. That's when you've got to start talking to them about stuff. And the thing is, I think just as a society, we don't talk to kids about stuff. We don't discuss important things with them.
I think we infantilize our children and hope they're acting a lot younger than they actually are.
Yeah, which I think is kind of shirking responsibility for the world that we're actually in. I always see it as people like want to protect their kids, which I understand, but I don't think you are protecting them. I think you're protecting you. From them growing up, which you can't do. For me, adolescence did really well was it looked at the shame of the dads who was like, "I failed you." And that's exactly what kind of happens, is that parents fail their kids by not preparing them for the realities.
I think he's done everything right, because there's a line in that where he said that his dad battered him.
Yeah, and I didn't bat, but the dad is still angry. He relies on women to get him out of his anger. So without meaning to, he teaches the son the lesson that women are both a target for your anger and a reason that your anger should go away. They should take your anger away, and you have no responsibility for that anger. And he didn't even know he was teaching his son that lesson.
How did you bring the light with the dark?
Well, for me, I personally think everything is funny. I think everything's up for grabs. And when I say everything, I mean everything. I mean disease, death, whatever. It's like, anything.
This is a stand-up and you talking.
Yeah, because I'm a stand-up comedian. So I think any subject there is the possibility for comedy.
Nothing's off limits.
Nothing. I really don't think anything is off limits, because I think it's the way that you approach it. I don't want to impose my thoughts and thinking into those characters, because then it's not eclectic in any way. It's just me being filtered through different people, which I'm like, what's the point in that? You know, in Crompton, we explore the idea of being groomed, or a young person having murdered another young person. but we explore that in a funny way. The actual subject isn't funny, but the things around it are humorous enough that the thing that you then take in after is, oh shit, they were actually talking about this. And that's mad. I didn't even realize they were talking about that until it's happened. And I've taken that thing in without knowing that I was taking something in, which for, you know, for the main audience of our show, I think is, that's the right pitch for that.
Yeah. Me personally as a writer, I like to entertain.
Yeah.
Someone I laughed at in this was this actor who played a teacher, very dry.
Yeah.
So yeah, Archie was in the show as a teacher, as the main not the head teacher, but you
I am the teacher. His name is Mr. Abraham Hoare, which if you shorten that is Abe Hoare, because I hate kids.
It came across.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. Do you know what? There was stuff that was written, and then there was loads of improvising that I did with the kids, and I was like, look, you lot can rip me, I don't care. And once you tell that to kids, they really fucking go for it, man. Like, they were... One said something about, sir, what shampoo do you use? Because I don't want to use that. And I was like, yeah, all right, I ain't got hair. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get you in the next take, don't worry. And it was a lot of fun, because the teachers that I always liked in schools were the ones that, like, just visibly hated their lives. And I always respected them the most, because I'm like, none of us want to be here.
Well, in one episode, you leave and, like, it's the end of term, and you're like, all right, yeah. Don't contact me. Yeah. Don't...
No, don't speak to me again. Yeah.
So was it always a plan for you to have a part in it?
Yeah, it was. But the process took so long that the character I was originally going to play, I aged out of.
Was it Nickelback?
The teacher. No, I was going to be Nestor, the older brother to McKay. Yeah. But
Nestor doesn't look too much younger than you.
He doesn't look too much
younger. He's got more hair.
But he's definitely got more hair. And you know what? The guy playing Nestor, Joshua, is a wicked actor. So I was kind of like, okay, cool. Right, yeah. That's fine. And yeah, the teacher... Let's just say season two, the teacher's going to have a very funny journey, we'll say.
How was the casting process? Were you involved in that?
I was involved in everything. Yeah, casting was great, man. So we had Aisha Bywater, who did our casting. She did an amazing job.
She's very good.
She sent out an open casting on like TikTok, Twitter, or X, Instagram, Facebook. And we kind of figured out quite quickly that the actors that were less trained and less in the drama world, they were the ones that fit the show, because they kind of got the anarchic, chaotic spirit of the show better than the ones that were trained. You know, they were doing instinctive stuff rather than going, well, what's my thought process behind this? What's my character thinking? They were just doing it and they were playing. And it's funny because, you know, drama school, for all the good that it can do, it sort of takes away that element of play.
Well, I got in a play once and the director said to me, he goes, oh, you didn't go to drama school, did you? And I was vexed because I went to drama school, only did an MA, 1 year, but he actually meant it as a compliment. Yeah. It was like, he saw all the auditions and like, yeah, the kids who went to drama school were doing all kinds of, yeah.
Yeah, making strong choices. And you're like, but why? Why are you making that choice?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, I didn't go to drama school either. So when I act in stuff, I always get the thing of, you didn't go to drama school, did you? And I'm like, no, I do stand-up comedy. So you've got to sell it in a different way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got to be very alive doing it like that. And then that's what we found with the kids. And, you know, we saw some amazing kids. And then in the end, it was about finding the ones that that fit the characters the best. And then finding the ensemble. So, you know, they got to a point where there was like five options for Little Bit, five options for Venetia. And we were putting them together. We just did a day of like improv.
And chemistry testing.
Yeah, we just put them all together and go, which ones make the most sense in this group of people? And yeah, we landed on the kids that we got. And they're magic.
Yeah.
Some of them are going to be, they keep it up, they're going to be stars, man. Some of them, so annoyingly good.
Yeah. And how did you find acting in it and writing it, doing this shit at the same time?
Do you know what? I loved it for this and this alone. No one could tell me nothing. So I could do what acting-wise, I could do what I wanted. And like the director, bless her, Atosha, she could have said, do you think you would do this? And I'd just go, nah, it's written in the script, Atosha. Like, it never came to that, but I knew that I could do that. And so I felt a looseness with it that I'd never felt before, because I knew that ultimately it was my say.
And did you feel like you could let yourself go and not be looking at the kids and, oh, they've got this line wrong or they're doing it how...
Yeah. In the end, I didn't really care about the lines, to be honest. I wanted them to find the essence of what was in the scene.
Yeah.
But they got the essence and the lines. It may not have been in the same scene, but then they got them, and you know, it was either cut together or they got it in the last take. Or like, yes, that's it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just, you know, they managed to learn very quickly, because for, I think, all of them bar one, they've never been on a set before. They've never acted in front of camera, and they, you know, they did great.
Well, yeah, it didn't show.
Yeah.
Or rather, I guess in Converse, it kind of did show, because they were natural and didn't look like they were so polished.
Yeah.
And I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah.
No, but I think the whole thing worked really well. It was a pleasure to see. Yeah, so many black and brown faces in the show. It was a quote unquote, you can't see these quote marks because this is audio, but like a diverse show without it being, but it had some of those, you know, there is a thing about gun crime in there, violence, so you've got almost some of those cliched things, but so much more than that. It's just also a show about kids.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, we always, the discussion around race on TV, for me, it never looks at the thing of people in this country, in the UK, they don't mix to do with race like in America. Here it's culture. So if you all grow up in the same area, you can have, you know, your friend can be white, your friend can be black, Indian, whatever. And you all share that same culture, and therefore you can sort of take the piss out of each other because you know each other's cultures like that.
Yeah.
And that's how the UK works, which is why, you know, whenever I see something like a Top Boy as an example, and the gang is all black, I'm like, nah, man, there's one Moroccan in that gang.
Yeah, where's the Turkish dude?
Yeah, where's the Turk? Where's the Bosnian that was like grew up in a war zone? Like, come on.
Yeah.
You're gonna have one Muslim brother in there, and there's not. They're all black. Which I was like, okay, I get it. But gangs like that don't exist. When I say diverse, I don't mean black or whatever, Muslim, Indian. I don't mean none of that. When I say diversity, I mean diversity, a mixing of different cultures, which is what the UK does. Yeah, it's a melting pot, for good or for bad.
But no, I thought it was an excellent show. I enjoyed it all. Watch all 10 episodes. Like I said, they're out now on This Is Crompton by Archie Maddox. Out now on BBC Three and BBC iPlayer, so make sure you watch. It's fantastic. Thanks for your time, Archie.
Thanks, bro.
Johnny Wright was in conversation with Archie Maddox. To hear more writers, go to writermosaic.org.uk.